So I'll just quickly introduce myself before we start. As you heard, I am the president of the European Council of Skeptical Organizations. I will tell you more about it during the presentation. I am president for 2 years, and now I get elected for another two. Currently, we've been working on setting up a better basic bureaucracy on which we can then later work with. So these 2 years have been mainly bureaucratic, but now in for the future, we have a couple of things planned that will benefit every member, including your organization, when it comes to sharing material and creating new material that we can all use across Europe. But I can't, the microphone is too short, and then I have to do this. So, okay. Okay, so I'll introduce myself quickly. I got into the skeptic movement through the Paranormal Challenge in 2013, and then through organizing various events until in 2017 I was elected the president of the European Council. I'm interested in religion. That's my main topic and my academic theme as well. I don't know what's funny, but okay. Okay, so I have my courses that I teach in high schools all over the Czech Republic. They're called Don't Be Fooled. And it's a mix of critical thinking and basic manipulation, understanding basic manipulation, and false objectivity, as codified by Jay Rosen. So I also contribute to the Czech Religious Journal and their website when it comes to news about religion, and especially worldwide. Let's see what else. Yes, I like to visit religious groups. The weirder, the better. And I think that's actually a very important thing for skeptics to do, because it teaches you patience, and that's the most important quality we can have. Okay. So yeah, and I live in Prague with my dog and my partner, all the other way around. Okay. So my
son fiancé est mentaliste, donc vous l'avez compris, c'est quelque chose d'important. Voilà.
Okay. I am not used to speaking from a script, so I apologize if I go off the script. Okay. Perfect. This is what we will be talking about today. If you have any questions, of course, I'll be very happy to answer them. Either today after the talk or during this weekend. We will look at the 2000-year evolution of the skeptical movement very quickly. And very quickly. And we will start with certain definitions. I know that many of you know all of this, but I want to make sure that we are all on the same page so we can build on that from there, especially since I'm speaking in language that's not your first language. We will then look into the important milestones in modern skeptic history, and we will look at the movement today and what are the challenges, what are the issues, what are our problems, and we will look at the different groups around Europe and what they're up to, what they are doing. All right, dia 2-3, right? Yes. Okay, why is it not moving? Okay, so we are going to look at the basic definitions. So, we know that skepticism, we can define it as systematic doubt. And if we look at the philosophical background, the first skeptic was Grotius, and he said, nothing exists. Even if something exists, nothing can be known about it. And even if something can be known about it, knowledge about it can be communicated to others. Sorry, it's up over there. I'm reading the quote.
Rien n'existe, même si quelque chose existe, rien ne peut être su à ce propos, et même si quelque chose peut être su à ce propos, la connaissance que nous en avons ne peut pas être communiquée aux autres.
And I think we can all agree that's unpolitical, too skeptical for us, even for us.
Pour expliquer, moi j'ai traduit les commentaires qu'avait préparé Claire. J'ai pas traduit toutes ces diapositives. Peut-être j'aurais dû le faire, mais ça aurait supposé que je fasse un duplicata de son PowerPoint. C'est un peu compliqué. Olivier, vas-y.
Si vous avez enlevé les caractères spéciaux,
pas de souci. Attends, je les enlève. Je les enlève une seconde. Oui, mais je sais. Moi, j'ai l'habitude de travailler avec ça. Alors,
à côté du cadre,
à gauche, le cadre avec les
en haut,
en dessous de L, juste en dessous de L.
Non, c'est pas quoi, dans la défaut.
Ça te dérange ?
Vas-y.
Il n'a pas dans le.
Oh, the dots are gone. Okay.
I'm not in the slide anymore now. I'm off the slide. Why? Okay, fine.
So, then we have, that was philosophical skepticism, the roots. Then we will jump 1,000 years to religious skepticism, which is questioning various religious beliefs and claims.
Parce que là, on n'arrive pas à avoir une vue d'ensemble de ce qui est écrit.
Tu veux que je fasse plus petit ?
Tu passes par page.
Non, mais il n'y a pas de page.
Parce que là, on
n'a pas une vue d'ensemble qui passe page par page. Il n'y a pas de page. Non, il n'y a pas de page dans l'écran.
Mais non, mais je n'ai pas d'écran, je ne sais pas pourquoi.
Je ne sais pas pourquoi.
Bon, je vais essayer de bien suivre le rythme. Allez, on continue.
Okay. So, mainly, religious skepticism refers to the questioning of dogmas within the church, but it can also be applied to those who doubt the religious narrative from the outside. So let me just quickly explain the difference between knowledge, belief, and faith.
Voilà, tu passes au-dessus, ça se partage. Et ton curseur au-dessus, dans la barre au-dessus, j'en ai.
Non. Oh.
Non, je suis mort là.
Excuse-moi.
Sorry.
Là. Pas ça,
ouais, non, mais là.
Non, tu fais au-dessus du carré blanc. Là, oui. Là, celui-ci. Là, ici, tu passes au-dessus. Là,
non.
Et là, tu vas faire page par page.
Non, je ne fais pas page par page. Non, je vais faire ligne par ligne.
Non, regarde. Mais non, tu fais page par page, on en peut lire. On va faire ça. Je vais faire chier. Je vais arriver.
Can I continue? Thank you. So.
Okay, well, we believe faith in God. All right.
Okay, so slide 5, right? Good. If we look at this diagram, I want to explain. So here we have belief, which is everything we think is true. That's the big one. Then inside of it, we have knowledge. And knowledge is everything for which we have evidence. And then we have faith, which is much bigger. And that's everything we believe to be true, despite having no evidence. I'm not saying that the evidence does not exist. I'm just saying we believe it without actually checking if there is evidence. So, for example, we can believe that climate change is caused by humans, and that would be true. That is a true claim. However, if we actually don't read anything about it, in our head, in our diagram, it isn't faith. because we did not check anything. And sometimes we skeptics forget that just because it's part of the skeptic faith, we have to move it from faith to knowledge. So this is just to explain the basic idea here. So we talked about philosophical, religious skepticism, and now scientific skepticism. And so if we compare looking, for example, at religion from religious skepticism and scientific skepticism, the religious view would be just saying, huh, there's one God, but he's three, but he's one, but he's three. That sounds strange. Now, and if you look at it from scientific skepticism, it would be, okay, there is supposed to be a miracle here. There's an intersection between the spiritual and the material world, and the scientific skepticism looks at the intersection of the material and the faith. All right. So, it's not working very well. There we go. I don't know why it's doing that, sorry. So, of course, and as skeptics, we would use the scientific method. Again, I am very sorry about the format. So, we look at things based on the pattern, we create a hypothesis, and then we do an experiment, see if it works. Based on that, we will do a theory, and then we could go back to observing if that theory then it takes more of a rhythm to practice, or if there's some need to change it. I know you all know about this. It's just a very kind of good way to. It's good to just say it again and again, because even skeptics tend to say theory when they mean hypothesis in everyday language, and I think we should be careful about that, especially as skeptics, to make sure that the colloquial use of theory is not being misused, at least by us. Okay, so we can now go into the skeptical movement. So the skeptical movement started as an idea around scientific skepticism, and it started as people being interested in it and pushing it on among other people. The main idea, of course, is avoiding making conclusions without investigation, and it's about applying scientific findings and methods to empirical claims across fields. Of course, we have to always make sure that we promote reserving judgment until evidence is presented. That's another hard thing for us skeptics. And we need more information generated by various fields that's backed up by evidence, because sometimes skepticism tends to focus only on evidence from the hard sciences, the technical sciences, and we do have a tendency to misunderstand social sciences. And of course, the hardest part of being a skeptic is keeping your opinions to yourself until there really is definitive evidence of what we're supposed to judge. Here is just, again, a very easy diagram of evidence. Of course, we started down with the anecdotal, which is the lowest form for us. Then we go to case studies, and then we can go up to empirical evidence. Again, I know all of you know this. It's just good that we get our vocabulary straight for the future talks. Okay, so now we can go look at the milestones. Here are the first part of our history. If we look at this, you'll see that at the beginning we can put in 1881 in the Netherlands. And the first part of our history, or the kind of the milestone at the end of it, is the work that Houdini did with Scientific American when it comes to testing paranormal phenomena in a systematic way. So let's look at the BTDK. You can see that it's called the Association Against Quackery. It was founded in the Netherlands. And this organization was absolutely crucial when it came to the regulation of what in English we call snake oil, which means medicine that's not medicine. So stuff that's being called medicine.
Moi, je pense que la meilleure traduction, c'est la poudre de perlimpinpin.
Okay. I love that word, but it takes me a minute. So here you can see the second point of the second blood. It's the name of their magazine that they publish until today. And their main successes was the professionalization of medicine. So making clear who can call themselves a doctor and who can absolutely not. And also the regulation of pharmaceuticals, they were one of the first countries to regulate pharmaceuticals on a government level through law. So that was very, very important. And that's why I chose this as the really the start of the skeptical movement, even though they did only deal with medicine. There we go. I think we all recognize this guy. Wonderful, exactly. So I'm sure you all know that the author of Sherlock Holmes was the least rational person. You would think that if he put together such a rational character, he himself would be rational as well. But he was actually a big spiritist. His wife was a medium. And he actually based the character of Sherlock on what we can say is a mix of the text of a detective from Edgar Allan Poe, Dupin, and on his own teacher, Joseph Bell. Joseph Bell was a professor of medicine in Edinburgh, where Doyle studied, and Bell supposedly had a great ability to perceive things. He was very good, had a wonderful perception of things, and supposedly you can see his personality traits in Sherlock, those who knew both. I mean, who knew Bell and read Sherlock. So the first book was Study in Scarlet, and the reason why I'm including a novel here, and not a scientist, but a book, is because he made it popular to question things, to look for evidence, to be analytical. Of course, you know, we have the character of Dupin, but Sherlock became much more famous than that, and that's why I'm putting him here, because he made it very popular for the people to like nitpicking and to be a little bit pedantic. And so I call it systematic nosiness. I don't know how it ended up being translated, but systematic nosiness and the hobby of nitpicking. And here at the bottom, you will see that I have written that he was popularizing the art of induction. I know everyone here will be surprised that I did not say deduction, because that's the word that's being used. But actually, as a skeptic, when we look at Doyle's work, technically it's induction, not deduction. And just to explain the difference, if we want to be skeptical, we have to be skeptical even about the things we like. So with deduction, we start with a theory, which we see, which we try to apply into the real world as a hypothesis, observe if it works in the real world, again, and then confirm the theory. However, induction, what Sherlock was doing, was that we start with the observation, and we look for the pattern. Then we have a hypothesis, which we then can confirm into a theory with evidence. So he was really doing induction, and I don't understand why the formatting is so bad. I'm sorry. Okay. Who knows this guy? Maybe who is the teacher here?
John Dewey.
Very good. John Dewey. Oh, it's written there in French. I'm sorry. You were almost, but that was very much what psychics do. Yeah. So John Dewey was a pedagogue, and he was a philosopher and an author, and he worked a lot with, like I said, children. And he wrote a lot about democracy and critical thinking. And actually, his way of defining critical thought is the one we kind of use until today, even if we know it or not. So he defines critical thinking as a reflection on thought. So kind of being in your own head and seeing your thought patterns and seeing how those thought patterns actually relate to the real world. So he was very much into analyzing your decision-making process and into a healthy skepticism, but also keeping the empathy of the open mind. So that's the reason I also chose him, was the empathy. But his book, How We Think, is a very important book when it comes to critical thinking and understanding how it actually got to be popular. John Dewey started a couple of schools where he was doing kind of these integrated classes where he would teach math by baking a cake. So he would teach fractions by baking a cake with the students, and he would do all these things. So he kind of had an alternative teaching method, but it seemed to work. But it was unfortunate he did not have anyone to really continue it. Of course, we have alternative schools, but those usually have many issues. And his, from what I had a chance to read and research, there weren't any issues. So unfortunately, no one has really picked it up until some of the...
Tout le monde a saisi ou on résume ce qu'elle vient de dire là? On résume. Elle remarque que John Dewey est quelqu'un qui, en fait, n'a pas eu de continuateur en tant que tel, alors que c'est quelqu'un qui avait mis au point des méthodes pédagogiques qui étaient particulièrement actives et particulièrement novatrices. Par exemple, il enseignait les maths en faisant de la pâtisserie, en prenant un gâteau, en le coupant en parts, des choses comme ça. Voilà. Oui, mais bien sûr. Alors, on peut y revenir.
Swedish schools, some of the
oui.
Swedish schools.
In France also, but anyway, we can discuss that
later. Yeah. Okay, now Houdini. I guess I don't have to introduce him that much. Let me just see where. Okay, yeah, here we are. I don't know if you know that Houdini was very good friends with Arthur Conan Doyle until Houdini debunked Doyle's favorite medium. So that was Mina Crandon. Houdini himself used to be a fake medium. He used to make money from being a fake medium. And then when his mother died, he was looking for a real one. And he couldn't find one. So the Scientific American magazine took him on their panel and as a consultant. And they traveled all over the U.S. looking at various mediums. And one of them was Mina Crandon. And Mina Crandon was Doyle's favorite medium. And she's a fascinating character. Like, there's the story of the battle between Houdini and Mina is incredible. If we have time at the end, I will tell it to you, or I can tell it later when we have some drinks outside. So the panel offered $5,000, and it was the start of a systematic approach to trying to research paranormal phenomena.
Les sceptiques italiens s'appellent le CICAP, C-I-C-A-P. Vous trouverez facilement en tapant sur Internet.
Ok.
Sylvain, ma frère, on peut.
Ok. So, now this is the second part of our history. We can put two borders. One, Karl Popper defines the principle of falsifiability. And it ends with the U.S. group getting formed. So we'll look at the various parts in between. So, Popper, I don't have to introduce him that much. As you know, he was the father of the modern theory of science. He came up with the idea of critical rationalism and falsifiability. And so he came up with the idea that claims must be formulated in a way that they can be tested. And a theory confirmed by experiments is only valid as long as it is not disproven. So he was the one who kind of started our very critical approach to science and to ourselves, and he's a very important person in skeptic history because of that. Okay. The next group, I'm sure you all know Comité Parat. It's the Belgian, your Belgian colleagues. They are officially the first skeptic group in the modern sense, that they deal with everything paranormal. They consider themselves to be the founders of the skeptical movement. I would disagree, but they are definitely the first group in the sense as we know it. So this is their motto, the first part is in French, so you guys can read it too. So don't refuse anything a priori, don't accept anything without proof. And that very much sums up our skeptic thoughts and our skeptic ideas. So I'm sure you all know who this is. Yes, very much so, correct. So he defined the Decalogue, the skeptical Decalogue, or the critical thinking Decalogue. So if you look at some of his points, don't worry, not all of them. The first one is, do not feel absolutely certain of anything. I think that's very good. That works very well with the skeptic movement. Number three, never try to discourage thinking, for you are sure to succeed. Have you ever noticed that that esoteric people will use that phrase? You are thinking too much. Don't think about it. You have to feel it. Yeah, so they're doing exactly the opposite. But you can actually see what an issue it is, because they tell people not to think, just to feel, and they succeed. Because the people really stop thinking, and they say, okay, well, it still makes me feel good, and I won't think that actually it does not make sense. Then the eighth point, find more pleasure in intelligent dissent than in passive agreement. For if you value intelligence as you should, the former implies a deeper agreement than the latter. So sometimes we skeptics, again, agree with each other a little bit too much. So it's good to sometimes have a debate and discussion about certain things and approaches. The only thing I would find an issue with this Decalogue is point seven. Do not fear to be eccentric in opinion, for every opinion now accepted was once eccentric. The reason why I find an issue with it is because it does not work without context, without understanding the pyramid of evidence. Because this is a phrase very often used by the esoteric movement. You know, we are the underappreciated Galileo, or we are the misunderstood Einstein, or something like that. No. No. Because both of these men, few first had a huge amount of knowledge and evidence, and then they came up with something. They were not spending their days in their mother's basement doing nothing, just strolling online. But so this is a point where it has to be explained. Yes, of course, opinions today were before considered eccentric, but we have to have some evidence beneath them to actually push them on. So then the next personality.
Claire?
Ah, sorry.
Non, non, ok.
Excuse-moi,
c'est laquelle des lois où on te dit ne cherchez pas à comprendre, juste à vous tromper.
La première.
On va remonter. C'est bon?
Quand tu verras pas quand j'ai dit FCN.
So I'm sure you can find the Decalogue completely translated in French somewhere. It's, yeah. It's even translated into Czech, so I'm sure it'll be in French.
De toute façon, c'est Russell, Bertrand Russell. De toute façon, vous aurez tous ce diaporama avec le compte rendu de l'université d'automne, dont vous pourrez faire un peu de travail de traduction de votre côté aussi. Ça ne fera pas de mal. Et on fera une interview écrite après, oui. Hein? Alors, on était
22.
So we're finished. I don't know why. Because of the computer, maybe.
Maybe, yeah. So, I don't think I have to introduce James Randi either to you. Of course, he is kind of the father of the modernized paranormal research or the popularization of it. So we can call him an expert on the fraudulent imitation of paranormal phenomena. As you know, in 1965, he started his paranormal challenge in which he offered $1 million to anyone that can prove a paranormal thing. This challenge is closed in 2015 because no one passed it and Randy was just stepped down from doing this. However, there are still challenges like this all over the world, and I am very proud to say that Czech Republic currently offers the highest prize, which is $161,000 calculated. So James Randi is very famous for his project Alpha. Do you know it? So I will briefly explain. That's Carlos. And Alpha was before.
Alpha. Well, I don't have anything about Alpha.
Okay. So
Project Alpha was on the app.
Yeah. Sorry. So I'll just quickly explain, and you can translate. A university was looking for people who really had paranormal abilities. And they gathered lots of young people to come in, and they did various experiments. Randy, when he heard about this, he sent in two street magicians, quite unknown, and he was curious how long they will last in this research. In the end, they were the only two left. And it was revealed at the press conference that the scientists had to announce their big results. These two came forward and said, "We were faking it."
Okay. Donc c'était, il s'agit d'une recherche.
Il s'agit d'une recherche en fait par une université, oui, chez l'université.
I forgot. Sorry. I will Google it.
Donc une université quelconque qui avait fait appel à un grand nombre d'étudiants pour essayer de détecter parmi eux d'éventuels pouvoirs paranormaux. Et James Randi, eu vent du projet, a envoyé deux magiciens, illusionnistes, deux compères, comparses, qui se sont glissés dans le groupe et qui, évidemment, une fois que tous les critères ont fonctionné, tous les autres étudiants ont été éliminés, sauf ces deux-là. Et au moment où les universitaires ont voulu annoncer leurs résultats triomphalement, les deux ont dit, en réalité, nous sommes des illusionnistes.
Voilà. And what was the scientist's reaction? When they heard that they guessed?
They were devastated.
Tout le monde a compris, là, je
pense. But what's interesting about it, so were the two guys. Because they spent 2 years of their life with these people, lying to them.
Oh, wow.
2 years. And so they were actually very reluctant to tell the truth at the end.
Ah, d'accord.
Because they felt terrible.
Ouais. Tout le monde a compris, là, c'est important, ça.
Donc, en fait, l'université en question est évidemment complètement dévastée, comme elle dit, effondrée, mais ainsi que les deux personnes, parce que pour eux, ils avaient passé 2 ans de leur vie dans ce truc, à mentir, et donc ils étaient extrêmement réticents après à l'idée de dire, finalement, j'ai été un menteur pendant 2 ans.
I have great respect for Randy, but if I were to criticize him for something, it would be the Carlos hoax. The Carlos hoax was set up in Australia to show that channeling does not work, it's not real. And really, it was before the internet. And so they sent posters and information to Australia that this great channelist is coming, and that he can communicate with aliens and speak to people and give them advice. And so many people came to see him, came to see the great Carlos. But, of course, the great Carlos was just the guy Randy picked to pretend to be this channelist. And after the performance was over, the Carlos said, "I'm a fraud. I'm not real. I just came here to trick you and to show you how gullible you are," which made everyone very angry, surprisingly. And 3 years later, someone else came in and did the exact same thing. So the media did not learn, the people didn't learn, they just were very angry after the first experience. But it absolutely did nothing for their critical thinking. And then generally, 2 years ago at Nexus, there was a panel discussing techniques that, Nexus is the Northeast Conference on Science and Skepticism. and we were discussing what techniques should skeptics use. And we decided that hoaxes are a terrible idea because never in the history of skepticism did they actually work in benefit for us. We just made everyone very angry at us and no one learned the lesson.
Donc, vous faites ce que j'ai fait moi aussi, parce que je ne connaissais pas ça. Vous tapez Carlos Hoax sur Internet et vous comprenez toute l'histoire. Donc, en anglais, il y a donc ce terme qui s'appelle channeling. Channeling, ça veut dire la communication avec les esprits, les extraterrestres, peu importe, les aliens, tout ce qu'on veut. Et donc, Carlos Hoax, donc, c'était effectivement une manipulation qui a été révélée après. Et les conclusions qu'ils en ont tirées, mais ça peut faire l'objet d'une discussion, c'est que finalement, quand on fait une mystification pour montrer aux gens à quel point ils sont crédules, et c'est pas évident qu'on ait le résultat qu'on attend, c'est-à-dire que les gens se disent « Mais oui, en effet, j'étais con, quoi. » On peut avoir même l'effet inverse, c'est ce qu'elle rappelait. Je trouve que c'est un point qui mériterait pas mal de discussion.
Okay, so the next point. Okay, so the name Psychop might sound familiar. It's actually almost a direct translation of the Belgian group's name into English. And it was founded together by Randi, Isaac Asimov, the psychologist B.F. Skinner, and Carl Sagan. They, of course, there were more fascinating members, but these are probably the biggest names. And later it was renamed to Committee for Skeptical Inquiry. So this was when skepticism started to have more presence in the media and started to be more visible online, not online, but like in the people's eye. They got into talk shows, and this is the first time that it became organized like in such a big way throughout in the U.S., and this inspired then many European groups to continue to do this as well. So, which takes me to the third part of our history. It starts with the airing of the TV show Cosmos by Carl Sagan, and it ends with now. So, when Carl Sagan started to do his TV show, he got lots of criticism from his fellow scientists that he was vulgarizing science. That it shouldn't be this way. Science should be kept up on a pedestal, and it should not be lowered to the lay people. Of course, our view on that has changed radically since then, but at the time, he was criticized a lot. And Carl Sagan played an important role when it comes to science communication. He set the bar very high, and also what I see as very important, especially when we consider today how we do skepticism, is that he put his heart first in it. It was about empathy, and it was about his love of science that he was trying to share with everyone else. And yeah, it says in the French, he made the children and adults excited about science. And I'm sure all of you know his quote, extraordinary claims need extraordinary evidence. And that's kind of the quotes we use in our paranormal challenges worldwide as well. It's not just about anecdotes, you actually have to show something.
Pas besoin de traduire, là, je pense.
So, in 1989, that was the first year of the skeptic congresses. That was the first year where there were enough skeptic organizations in Europe to actually meet and start communicating and start sharing what they had and what they know and their experience. So, the logo you see right here, it's the logo of this year's congress that happened in Belgium. And this leads me to the establishment of EXO. EXO is an umbrella organization for skeptical, rationalists, and science communicating movements. For example, here in France, you call yourselves sceptiques, so you call yourselves skeptics. But in many other countries, skeptic is almost considered a bad word. So they use the word rationalist or other versions thereof to push the same message. And so EXO is made up of many of these organizations, even though they don't have the word skeptic in their name.
Oh, 28, pardon.
Okay. So here, slide 29, yes. So in 2003, Randy started doing his own conference. It was called The Amazing Meeting. It was a conference on science, skepticism, and critical thinking in Las Vegas. It then turned later into SciCon, which is happening a month from now. Randy hasn't been there in the last 2 years because of his health, but they still think of him. They wore beards last year and took a picture in beards. It's an interesting conference to go to if you have the chance. The American skeptic scene is very different from the one in Europe, so it's interesting to see that comparison. And this is my favorite conference ever. Have any of you been to QED?
No, I don't think so.
You have to go.
You have to go. S'organiser un voyage collectif à Manchester.
So they were off for a year. They took a break this year, but they're happening again next year. You have to buy your tickets on time because you don't have a chance otherwise. Last time there were 700 people there. It's one of the biggest skeptic conferences or festivals, and it has everything. It has talks, workshops, podcast recordings, movie screenings. It has some exhibits as well. And I was talking to Dominique last night. I was asking her if you have protesters here outside when you have your thing, and she said no. So at QED, there always are some, but the QED organizers are very nice, and they budget for having tea and cookies ready for the protesters outside. So they always bring them out tea and cookies. And because, you know, Manchester, it's England, raining, it's very cold, I do admire the tenacity of the protesters. They're there every year, and they're there for 3 days, standing outside in the cold and the rain to tell us how stupid we are. But, yeah, they give you CDs about intelligent design and books on intelligent design and about how evolution is bullshit and things like that. So we just smile and wave, and go in and into the warm. So this is.
Tout le monde a compris là?
Yeah.
Oui ou non?
Non.
Voilà.
Le détail que donnait est clair, c'est que cette manifestation dont on a effectivement entendu parler avec Dominique et Romy quand on était à Gand. C'est une énorme manifestation, elle a dit 700 personnes, on a dit 800, peu importe. Donc, et ceux qui font, nous n'avons pas ce problème ici, en tout cas on ne l'a pas eu jusqu'à présent, des gens qui viennent protester contre nos réunions, mais ça pourrait venir. Mais là-bas, par contre, ils ont toujours des gens qui viennent manifester contre le festival. Alors au lieu de les envoyer chier, ben, ils leur proposent du thé et des gâteaux, parce qu'en plus c'est à Manchester, c'est pas Montpellier, donc il fait froid, il pleut, etc. Et donc il y a des gens qui sont là, qui distribuent leurs CD sur l'intelligent design, des trucs comme ça, et qui expliquent comment l'évolution, c'est de la connerie, mais bon, on les accueille avec le sourire et ça marche comme ça. Voilà.
Il n'y a pas de violence, voilà.
So, kind of QED is, or the organizers and the people there are kind of the current form of the skepticism that we want to have. It's about, you know, friendliness, openness, discussion, and sometimes really weird topics. For example, last time I was at QED, I went to a workshop on how to get into a medieval castle.
Un château du moyen médiéval.
So that was a talk there, and another one was about how Polynesians navigate between the islands based on the waves. So that was also very interesting, and because usually at skeptic conferences we stick to alternative medicine and GMO and things like that. So this is always something completely different than you would expect.
Non, c'est pour expliquer à quel point c'est quelque chose d'extrêmement divers, dans la visite d'un château du Moyen Âge, quelque chose qui parlait de la manière dont les Polynésiens naviguent d'une île à l'autre, etc. Donc c'est pour expliquer le caractère extrêmement diversifié de cette manifestation.
So we have kind of the skeptic movement. No social movement can exist in a vacuum. So it's logical that it blends with movements similar to it. So as the skeptical movement, we've not the nationalist, but the rationalist, and the free thought movement, the humanist in some way. And I found out that this is actually some issue, because in some countries the humanists are not so well liked by the skeptics, but in some countries they're very good friends, so I guess it depends on where you look. Of course, secularist and atheist. So we do have a big overlap with these other groups as well. We do share many members, which makes our movement more difficult to define and to actually push into a clear direction, because everyone has a little bit different idea of what it is to be a skeptic and what it is to be a skeptical activist. So these are the aims of EXO, of the European Council of Skeptical Organizations. I will read them because they're so tiny. To promote and defend the highest standards of scientific integrity and practice in research, education, medicine, and public policy. Oh, actually, I'll just read it in French. That would be better.
No, you can read it in English.
Good exercise. To oppose the promulgation of claims and practices, including treatments that are not supported by or inconsistent with scientific knowledge and research, particularly when these may have adverse consequences. And number 3, to encourage the conducting of controlled tests and experiments on such claims and practices, one intention being to demonstrate to the public the broader applications of science and critical thinking. In particular, this applies to phenomena commonly identified as paranormal or pseudoscientific. However, no claims, explanations, or theories will be rejected in advance of objective evaluation. So, this is some of our projects that I talked about at the beginning. One of them is a universal glossary. By that, I mean, I know you have the Skeptical Dictionary translated to France from your colleagues in Montreal, but this would be a glossary on the EXO website, which would be much shorter, because I'm sure if you know the Skeptic Dictionary, sometimes it goes on forever. So this would be, I'd say, 500 words each for each subject to make it, and to make it in every language, and for it to be a referral point for journalists, not for any deep research, because journalists, they do use Wikipedia, but they don't want to admit that they use Wikipedia, so we want to present an alternative they don't have to be ashamed of. And then next thing would be the pan-European brochures. That means we would have a brochure for each skeptic topic, which would look design exactly the same, but it would have be different in every language, and also reflect data from the country of the language. Yeah, I got that idea from the Jehovah's Witnesses. So here we can look at the various categories of skeptical activities. We can divide them based on timing. Are they proactive or reactive? What type of contact do they happen in, and are they in real life or are they online? And the approach. Is an approach of a skeptic or of an skeptical activist? I'll explain. Maybe. So the proactive means that it informs and educates before there is a problem. So there is the educational websites, the talks and lectures on science topics, TV shows, conferences, campaigns. And the reactive one is the one that warns after there is a problem. And of course, skeptic groups do both. We do both proactive and reactive skeptical activism. So sometimes we focus on the reactive a bit too much, and we should focus on the proactive a little bit more. For example, the Italian skeptics, the CICAP group, they have an agreement with the government that they will teach critical thinking at pedagogical faculties. So they will teach students who are becoming teachers how to critically think, and I think that's like a wonderful proactive thing to do. So So, and then their in real life work is the talks and lectures, the marches, the courses, the events, the campaigns, the debates. This one really requires a big amount of patience and empathy, because it's, you don't have time to think about what you're going to say. You have to be able to give a respectful, uninsulting reply to the most craziest stuff you've heard in your life. And then, of course, is the online work, which is also very important. I don't know if you heard of GSOW. GSOW is a group that's always looking for new members. It's Guerrilla Skepticism on Wikipedia. It's run by Susan Gerbic from the U.S. Skeptics, first from from the CSI. And what they're doing is that they are creating new Wikipedia pages for skeptics, as well as checking those which already exist for mistakes, especially when it comes to pseudosciences and pseudomedicine. And they need editors in as many languages as possible. So if you have some free time and you would like to do this, or you don't know what to do as a skeptic, this is exactly the perfect thing to do, because everyone always checks Wikipedia first. So this is the first line of contact, and it's really important to have the Wikipedia pages in order. For example, when 2016, when there were the Olympics, people saw Michael Phelps with cupping, and Susan Gerbic saw that in the news, and she went quickly on Wikipedia to check the page on cupping, and she found out there's no skeptical information on it whatsoever. There's no actual information. It's just the alternative medicine information on the page. So she quickly edited it, and then suddenly it was reflected also in the articles written later, that information that she put in. So you can really see the cause and effect in this work. I don't know if you want to translate. Or
Rapidly, because the time is running fast. Mm-hmm.
Non, elle expliquait un petit peu cette pratique de la guérilla sur Wikipédia, donc qui consiste en fait à réagir aussi rapidement que possible, être finalement faire ce que font les croyances, et être très très présente sur les réseaux sociaux, mais en particulier sur Wikipédia. Je n'ai pas compris l'exemple qu'elle a donné, parce que Michael Phelps, je ne sais pas qui c'est, mais bon, c'est pour ça que je vais la traduire. Un nageur, oui.
Les ventouses.
D'accord, je ne suis pas du tout ça, donc je fais du mal à vous traduire exactement l'histoire. Voilà. Mais effectivement, au congrès de Gand, on a entendu parler de ça. En particulier, elle a donné un nom. Il y a un garçon aussi qui est d'Hongrie qui essaie de créer une dynamique pour qu'on participe à cette guérilla sur Wikipédia.
So, now in the skeptic movement, we're going through a schisma. And the schisma, or I don't know how you pronounce it in French, is this divergence in approach. There's an approach of the dogmatic skeptic, and the popularizing, or I've heard you use the word vulgarizing, skeptical activist. So the dogmatic skeptic feels that here is the data, that's it. If you don't understand it, too bad. It sounds, for me, a little bit derogatory, but there are skeptics who have this kind of approach. And then there's a popularizing skeptical activist, which will start explaining it bit by bit and kind of doesn't mind to kind of lower the science to make it understandable. I personally, surprisingly, lean towards being the skeptical activist. I think that we should give people more a bigger chance to understand our material than on the first try, and we should include as many people in the discussion as possible. And if we want to talk about how to get this in a good way to kids, there's a new discipline. It's called Philosophy for Children, and it is about teaching critical thinking in a non-aggressive, palatable way to kids. That you start by questioning fairy tales. That you read fairy tales and you say, well, was the good witch actually that good? And what do you think? And you go and make them question and you question. You don't give them any answers. You just keep giving them more questions for them to figure out. So that's a very interesting discipline. So, of course, we also have to somehow grapple with the issues of pseudo-skeptics. They use the word skeptic, but it doesn't really, it's not really skepticism. As we said at the beginning, skepticism is systemic doubt. So, I'm sorry, systematic doubt. And so these people are doubting, but it's not systematic. And as you say, that the difference between a skeptic and a conspiracy theorist is that the skeptic knows when to stop. And these people usually don't. And also, though, the bottom point, believing in one's own judgment but doing the work, that's common among people who call themselves skeptics and are in the skeptical movement, that they immediately say no, or that's not possible. They are right in many of the issues. I'm sure it's when we were talking at the beginning of the, you know, the belief, the faith, and the knowledge. So there, when you're just in the faith, you're a pseudo-skeptic. You have to get into the knowledge. Okay, this is my favorite quote. It's from, comes from Joe Nickel. We are not debunkers. We are investigators. Even though it is tempting to reject everything a priori, it is not skeptical. So this is quoted by, you know, being empathetic with other people, especially those who believe in weird things. And I understand that it's very difficult because sometimes the people who believe in weird things are, the things are very, very damaging. But we kind of have to present ourselves to be a little bit better. Skeptical personalities. Do you know on the left? Left top, Simon Singh.
You should pass. I think you should pass.
So, Simon Singh, mathematician, writes lots of books about codes.
Simon Singh, we know him here.
Yeah.
We've had a lecture about him.
Michael Marshall, the top right, Good Thinking Society. He's the driving force that made homeopathy not be paid by insurance in the UK anymore. So that's his work. On the bottom left, Richard Wiseman. He's a psychologist to Darren Brown, and he does a lot of things about critical thinking. And the bottom right, Brian Cox, rock star and physicist. And he is a very impressive personality, especially, for example, on his Twitter. He gets many people interested because he has a very different approach than scientists usually have. Now, the women of skepticism, we do need more women, but the women we do have are awesome, like Susan Blackmore, near-death experiences, out-of-body experiences, Deborah Hyde, she's the editor-in-chief of The Skeptic, her specialty is poltergeists. Bottom left, we have Carmen Sinopathy. She is a science mom, that means she and other mothers like her are trying to combat the nonsense moms find on the internet when it comes to child care and food and vaccines. And bottom right is Sally LePage, who does evolution and popularizes things about evolution, using her research on the evolution of the genitalia of fruit flies. So it's very weird, and it makes people interested. And I'm missing one. So here we have our converts, I like to call them. These are people who made money from woo and pseudoscience. On the top left, Ezra Ernst, I'm sure you know him. Then right, Britt Hermes. Mm-hmm. And she used to be a naturopath. She even went to third world countries and shot vitamin instead of anti-malaria vaccines to kids. The person who's not there, who's supposed to be there, is Pixie Turner. She used to sell or pooch nutrition tips and detoxing, and then she actually got educated in food, and now she still has the same audience on Instagram, but she pooches a very different message. But she knows the visual the people need, and she was able to convert herself with her fans. So that's very impressive. And the last person on the right, we have Ellie Grimes, who used to be a homeopath and became skeptic when she started writing a book in defense of homeopathy. So, Skeptics in Europe, of course, you know, UFIS, the French organization. Then it's you guys, Then we have the German Skeptics, 1987. They do also lots of stuff. One of the interesting things for you, I think, would be the information as we're coming up with faith. It's a very interesting website. They they also have an English version. The Swiss Skeptics, the Skeptics in Finland. Then we have the Spanish Skeptics, who also do lots of interesting things, including also they help homeopathy to not be paid from their insurance. Check out the Italian Skeptics. They do a huge festival every year. This is us. This is my group. We also do talks every Friday, once a month at the Academy of Sciences. We have an anti-prize, and we're going to have a pro-prize as well. The Swedish Skeptics, and there are many more, but I just did a selection of those people who sent me their information. So this is what we talked about today. Do you have any questions?
Thank you.